When it comes to understanding and acceptance of LGBTQ issues, things are changing quickly. But if you're a kid growing up outside the centers of gay culture and community, does that change feel like it's coming fast enough?
I don't want to live there now at this point in my life, but it's a good place to visit.
Yeah.
I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we'll hear lots of perspectives on how folks in the LGBTQ community relate to home when home is rural Kansas or Missouri. We hope you'll add your story to the mix. That's coming up, but first, the news.
My name is Brent Husher. I'm 35. We are here in Kansas City, Missouri at University of Missouri, Kansas City. Jonathan, who I'll be talking to, is a friend of mine and former coworker.
My name is Jonathan Pryor. I am 30 years old.
Earlier this summer, StoryCorps came to Kansas City with its Out Loud project to record and archive stories about the LGBTQ experience. They were particularly interested in finding people from rural areas.
What was it like growing up in small town Kansas with the identity that you hold?
It was great until I realized that my identity didn't fit.
I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're exploring LGBTQ experiences growing up in rural Kansas and Missouri. Do you have to leave for life to get better, or are there places where this combination kind of works? We'll start by hearing the rest of that conversation between Brett Husher, who grew up in Farmington, Missouri, and his friend Jonathan Pryor, who's from a small town in Kansas.
I love a small town. I think there's just something charming about being in a small town, running down the street, and it's much more simple and quiet than you get even in Kansas City, which isn't really that big. But, you know, when I got into high school and started exploring who I was, I realized and was being told by other people that who that is not acceptable. You realize that this maybe isn't a place where you can belong. So I think there are a lot of things about a small town that I really love and would love to go back to. But there are also things that I won't give up for that. So I feel like you kind of have to give up something. So how about you? Farmington, right?
Farmington, Missouri is where I hail from. I always found my town to be very good for me. Farmington, you know, like I describe it as the metropolis for like really small towns. And, you know, that's where folks came to shop at Walmart when I was growing up. I've always had really strong interpersonal skills, so I've always been able to get along with folks. And I've always, you know, I was class president for several years, and like it was, even though it was a high school of like 2,000 people, which is probably much larger than yours.
Yeah, mine was 400.
Right. So it was a bigger place.
Yeah.
But I mostly found everything was pretty fine because it was big enough for some anonymity, but small enough that at school folks know me, and then the folks who cared about the G and the LGBT didn't really bother me mostly.
Yeah.
So I think I was fortunate. I don't want to live there now at this point in my life, but it's a good place to visit.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is a difference because small town, everyone...
Small town.
Yeah, everyone knew you. And there's certainly smaller towns in Kansas and Columbus, Kansas, which is 3,000. But, you know, I was the baby of six kids, so I held older siblings who went through the high school. You know, some of us... There were only a couple teachers that all six of us had, but, you know, there were enough that everyone knew who a prior was. And
they had had prior priors.
They had had prior priors, and I was not like my brother who just graduated high school and entered high school, and he was the jock. You know, I was the band geek, and
me too.
Didn't want anything to do with sports. Well, not true. I think I would have wanted something to do with sports, but I felt like sports wasn't really accessible to me.
I think there are a lot of gay men who feel that way.
Yeah. And so, but music was, that was kind of what I stuck with. And so I entered high school and I was not like my brother.
Thanks to Jonathan and Brent for sharing that conversation with us. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now we're opening up the discussion. If being gay in rural Kansas or Missouri is part of your story, call us at 816-235-2888. We want to include your perspective. The assumption a lot of people make is that rural communities are not safe or welcoming places to be openly LGBT or Q. Has that been your experience? Is it more complicated than that? Are things changing? 816-235-2888. We've got lots of guests with stories to share this morning. Let's start by talking with David Wayne Reed. He's an actor and writer in Kansas City, also a friend of mine. His one-man show, Jolly Rancher, is a series of personal vignettes about being gay and coming out in a Kansas farm family. Hi, David.
Hi, Gina. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good.
Jolly Rancher is the punchline to a joke.
Yes. What do you call a gay farmer? A Jolly Rancher.
You are from Lewisburg, Kansas, right? Tell me about Lewisburg.
Lewisburg is south of Kansas City. It is famous for its apple cider and cider donuts, as well as Miss Teen USA 1995. Those are our big claims to fame, and maybe myself, if I'm giving myself too much credit.
Well, someone's got to give you credit, David. Your dad
right, starts here.
Your dad is a farmer, so talk to me about what it was like for you to grow up on a farm. Paint the picture for us of young David in a rural setting.
I remember my dad asking me when I was sitting on the tractor with him when I was about four if I wanted to be a farmer just like dad when I grew up. And I remember telling him no, and that I wanted to be a artist, a backup singer, and a stripper. Those were my earliest aspirations. So I really I broke his heart pretty early on, so we could heal after that.
I like that you wanted not to be the main singer, but a backup singer.
They had the outfits. I was enthralled by seeing backup singers. You know, that whole 20 Feet from Stardom film. I love that. I totally get it.
Well, so how old were you when you realized you were gay?
I think other people in my town realized it for me before I did.
Did they let you know that?
They did. Starting in about fifth grade, I became, I started being called names and bullied. And I don't think I came from a town of soothsayers necessarily, but that was my first clue that I was different. Up until then, you know, we lived on the farm. We were away from the city, so I could, and my siblings were much older than me, so I only had imaginary friends or my imagination. And and we didn't get a lot of visitors to the farm except for seed salesmen or the gas truck, water truck. And one of my favorite visitors to the farm was our seed dealer. My dad sold Golden Harvest seed corn, and his name was Bob. And when he would come, I would dress in drag. I would dress in my mother's clothes and wig, and I would go out and surprise him and do these kind of impromptu performances. And he was really validating of that. So much so, in fact, that he gave me a violin when I was a little boy that I also played. And I also grew up with lesbian teachers. So,
and you knew that they were lesbians?
It was kind of the best. We didn't talk about it, but yeah, everybody knew. They went to our church. They were my choir director, my English teacher, my debate and forensics coach. Their son was my best friend growing up. And so I really had an idea of what, I guess, an alternative family was before I even knew what that term was.
Can I jump in and say that I think there's a popular myth out there that it's very isolating to be gay, especially as a young person in a rural area? And I feel like you are telling a story where there are people around you who are either validating or role models in some way. I mean, not out role models necessarily, but what would you say about the level of isolation versus community?
Well, I think that being in a rural community is isolating in and of itself. You know, and of course, this was when I was growing up. So the 70s, the 80s, it was very different and much more isolating. But also, in that isolation, you're a little bit more free to actually be yourself. In some ways, I mean, in a small town, no one gets to be anonymous. In a small town, you're not afforded the luxury of being able to hide out. Everybody knows who you are, and everybody knows your business. But, you know, it was good and bad both. I mean, people get bashed in the city. People get hurt in the country. I don't know. I don't want to make any huge hasty generalizations, but it was the best of both worlds and also sometimes the worst.
Tell me your coming out story.
It's kind of a classic story. I came out in college. I went to K-State, the best veterinarian school in the nation, to study theater. And I came back home, I think, over maybe Thanksgiving break. It was a really cold Thanksgiving. And I came out to my father first and then to my mother. And then the next day, I went with my father to another farm we had to chop ice so the cattle could drink, so they could get water. And we're standing literally on thin ice with pickaxes in hand. And my dad says, "So, you're gay, huh? Did you become a vegetarian while you were at it?" And I said, "No, Dad." And he said, "Well, good, because you best be supporting beef, because beef supported you."
David, you said that you were visiting your family. Where did you live at this point? Had you already moved to Kansas City?
This is before I came to Kansas City. I was living in the Little Apple of Manhattan, Kansas. I went to K-State. And it was during that time.
Do you think that you had to move away? I mean, did that feel like obligatory to you as far as coming into your own and being able to be who you were? Or is that just a choice unrelated to sexual identity?
I didn't move because I was gay. I moved because of college, and I moved because of theater. I wanted to act, and there weren't a lot of equity houses in Lewisburg, Kansas, or neighboring communities. So it was just because of career and because I wanted to get out of town.
David Wayne Reed, stay with us. We'll be getting back to you, okay?
I sure will. Thanks, Gina.
I'd like to turn now to Jake Wisdom. He grew up in Hiawatha, Kansas, and although he did move away for a while, he ended up moving back with his husband. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
How is the weather in Hiawatha this morning? Are you guys seeing storms?
We are. I am in Atchison this morning working, but yeah, we are experiencing storms.
I want to hear your story in just a second, but first, what's your take on that question of whether you have to leave your small town as a gay person for things to, quote unquote, get better, in the sense of it gets better?
Well, I can only speak for my personal experience and where I come from. As a teenager, that's what I thought. I had thought I had to move away from Hiawatha, and in a sense, I did. And then come to find out, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, or I just felt like it had to be that. So that's what I did. The wonderful thing was that I could come back and I could feel safe and supported and come back into a very accepting and loving environment.
Well, we've also got Twig DeLuge on the line from New Mexico. He's a transgender man who grew up in Hayes, Kansas, and also lived in rural Missouri for a while. And Twig, what's your take on whether you have to move to the big city to find comfort in your own skin as a trans person?
Hi, Gina. I don't think that I moved, again, same thing, that I didn't move away because I was trans necessarily. I moved away because of college as well. But I think that safety is always a factor as far as trans identity. I think accessibility becomes an issue, particularly with healthcare, with the fear for me anyway, speaking for myself, knowing that Kansas and Missouri are places though where you can be fired from your job and that you can, you know, like, I love that gay marriage is now a thing, but anyway, I think that it's still difficult regardless, so, yeah.
Central Standard's going to take a short break. When we return, we'll hear Twig and Jake's stories, plus a mother shares her perspective on raising LGBTQ children in a rural area. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. Hello again. You're listening to Central Standard, and today's discussion is about identifying as LGBT or Q, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer, in a rural community. The narrative a lot of us have heard is that people who grow up gay in the country face hostile environments, but that they leave home, move to the city, and everything gets better. We're hearing personal stories that in some ways really challenge aspects of that idea. Call 816-235-2888 if you think your story illustrates an important aspect of the rural LGBTQ experience. Our guests so far are David Wayne Reed, Jake Wisdom, and Twig Deluge. We'll be hearing shortly from a parent. Jake Wisdom of Hiawatha, Kansas, welcome back.
Hi, Gina.
Tell me your story. First of all, how old are you?
I'm 24.
And what was it like for you to grow up in Hiawatha?
It was wonderful, really. To begin with, there was an adjustment. I came out right before my freshman year in high school.
And what year was this?
That would have been 2005.
Yeah, tell the story. Go on. I just wanted to set the time period.
So I came out then. I was the first and only person to come out in Hiawatha High School. About 350 students on average through the year. It was a little rough to begin with. I will say that it wasn't awful, but it was a little rough.
Describe what that means. Like, what are some of the things that you experienced that are memorable?
As in the rough part or in
maybe
general?
Both. I mean, really paint this picture for us.
Okay. Well, the main effort was just getting everyone used to the fact is that no one's been exposed, or they think they've been exposed, these teenagers, to a gay individual. So they're going through the adjustment of knowing, understanding, accepting, et cetera. And that first year I was there, my principal wasn't very supportive. But then my sophomore year, we had a new principal, and he was super supportive, and things turned around so quickly.
Can you explain to me a little bit, like, what it means for one principal to not be supportive and the other one to be very supportive? Like, what are some of the specifics that make the difference?
Well, slurs, harassing, et cetera, regarding sexual orientation is considered sexual harassment. And so there's rules in place, and there was a rule book about sexual harassment. If it occurs once, if the perpetrator is given a warning, it occurs again, they're suspended for 3 days. It occurs the third time, they're expelled. And so the principal was not going through the process, as in someone that had maybe harassed me or called me the F-bomb had done it 3 times before they initially got the warning. You know, maybe there was a few week lapse period. So then when the new principal came, it was immediate. You know, something occurs, you go to him, he discusses it with them, and they get the warning. And normally by the time that they're given the warning, they shape up and aren't going to harass you anymore.
Can you talk to me about just the decision to go ahead and come out in an environment where nobody had done that before? And did you consider staying closeted, or was it just something that you knew you had to do and were ready to take on?
I wasn't quite ready for it at the time. A friend of mine, I had confided in her. She'd shared it with someone. And at that point, I could have denied it or I could have embraced it. And there was something in me that decided, I'm just going to embrace it. I'm going to be who I am. And the moment that I did that, everything opened up to me, everything I ever could imagine. I kind of had a rough childhood. And there were people in the community that came up and helped me. It takes a village to raise a child. And in a sense, this village helped raise me. and helped me go on the right direction of you need to go to college, you need to be educated, you need to do well in school, you need to do all of these things that maybe I wasn't provided at home, but this community in a whole came up to support me and help point me in the right direction.
How was it coming out to your family? Was your family supportive?
They were. My mother and father were not married at the time or haven't been married for a long time. My mother was pretty, I think she knew it. I think she knew a long time ago. So she was prepared for it. And the rest of my family, I'm really close with my grandmother. She had a hard time with it. But in general, I guess their thought process was that there were other things going on, that they had bigger fish to fry than having a gay grandson or a gay son. So it just kind of was like, okay, and you went on.
Did you feel safe for the most part? I mean, you talked about slurs and how principals responded to them. That means that people were throwing slurs at you.
Certainly. I always felt safe. I never felt physically threatened. I knew that a macho guy calling me the F-bomb in front of his friends in the hallway was just a way of showing off or flexing their muscles. I knew that there would be nothing. They would not say those things to me if we were one-on-one and they weren't trying to show off for their friends. And I know that they would never, I couldn't say never, but I never felt that there would be physical violence associated with that.
You did move away for a little while to Des Moines, is that right?
That is correct.
Talk to me about, first of all, the decision to move away and then the decision to move back to Hiawatha.
Well, we were married in Des Moines. I had a friend that lived in Des Moines, so I was familiar with the area. Gay marriage was legal there and was legalized my senior year in high school.
I need to jump in because I feel like we've missed a really important piece of the story. You just said we were married. I think we need to meet your husband.
Okay, I apologize.
No, that's okay.
Well, I met my husband when I was 18 in the small rural area. We were connected by mutual friends. You know, everyone knows everyone. So we met, fell in love, bought a house together, got married. It all went along pretty quickly, as I've heard commonly in the gay community, that relationships can tend to move quickly. And so our relationship moved quickly. We were dating, living together, owning a house, engaged, all while I was going to school and working full time. So it all just kind of was like a whirlwind. So when we were married in 2012 in Des Moines, we had decided that's where we need to go. We need to go someplace where our marriage is recognized and where we can feel like we are very accepted there, or that we're not going to be persecuted, or, you know, that someone's going to say something, or that we're going to have to deal with any of the negativity associated with it. So when we were married there, we had already made the plan to move there. But that plan didn't occur for another year. So we moved up there. I obtained a position, and that was the key decision maker on making the move. So I obtained a position in Des Moines and we moved there. I enjoyed living in the city. I'm a city person. My husband grew up on a farm, and he's very, very simple, as in very little things make him happy. So moving him to the city was not maybe his number one priority, but it was something that made me happy, so he went with me as well. So we went and moved to Des Moines, and we really missed the small town, as in when you go through tough parts in your life in the city, if you don't have very many friends, as we had just moved there, you don't have a lot of people to help support you in rough times. And so we definitely missed that in Hiawatha from where we're from. So there were some things that occurred with my job, and I had lost my job, and we were kind of on rough times on, you know, what are we going to do? What's the next step? So we decided to move back home because we were going through a rough time and we really wanted the support. When we moved back, it was a few months after Fred Phelps was coming to town to protest at churches. And a friend of mine had organized this very peaceful protest, but it really wasn't a protest. It was, he's in town. We're not going to even acknowledge that he's here, but we're going to do some good while we're at it. So at the local coffee shop, they had collected some, she was collecting donations to buy some educational material books for the library for LGBT issues. And it had a phenomenal turnout. It was just a little thing she put on Facebook, and she raised way above and beyond the amount of money that she planned. She just wanted to raise $20 to buy one book she had in mind. And for something so small, she raised, I want to say about $800,
$700-$800. To create a, maybe almost even like an LGBT section of the library there?
Certainly. So she just wanted some educational materials, but with that level of donations, we could almost create a section. And I wasn't involved in that. But when that had happened, it only reaffirmed that we made the right decision to move back home.
When nationally, when you hear news about coming out of Kansas, it can create an impression, and Fred Phelps is certainly part of this, of what the mentality is in Kansas around LGBTQ issues. Do you feel like, is that sort of a struggle for you as someone who, it sounds like, is part of a community that responds very differently than he does to these issues?
Can you rephrase the question for me?
I guess, how is it for you that, you know, Fred Phelps in some ways, he's a known figure nationally, or was a known figure nationally, who people associate with a Kansas attitude toward LGBTQ issues?
Well, it's kind of rough because that's what you say, you're from Kansas, and there's two things that are associated with you, the Wizard of Oz and Fred Phelps. And so you would think that there would be a large level, you know, that a majority of Kansans, if Kansas could produce a group of people, an individual and a group of people that do what they do, that there may be a majority of Kansans that have the same thought pattern or what they believe. In our little town, that's definitely not the case. We have two other couples. One is married. The other one, they've been together for a very long time. Both of the couples have a business in the area, and it doesn't seem to affect their business in any way, shape, or form. They seem to be prospering. The community really, really supports us, and it's not like we're hiding or you know, not involved. I'm the treasurer of our Chamber of Commerce. So we're out there. We're out there in everyone's face. We're right there. It's not like we're being passive and just kind of keeping to ourselves. We're involved in all of it. And we seem to really be embraced. When we moved back, my doctor saw us in the grocery store, and he's like, I'm so glad you guys moved back. You add so much value to the community. You have no idea. And I never in a million years would I have thought that. But it's just really, that's how supportive our community is.
I want to turn back to David Wayne Reed for just a second and then move on to some of our other guests. But David is the Kansas City actor and writer we spoke with earlier. He moved from Lewisburg to Kansas City when he was not much younger than Jake Wisdom is now. And David, when you listen to Jake, do you pick up on a generational difference?
Not to age myself, but I do. And I'm really thrilled to hear that he came out in high school after his freshman year. That would that would have been unheard of when I was in high school in the late 80s. I graduated in 1990. I think that that's changed a lot. And, you know, there were other, obviously, of course, I mean, 1 in 10, right? There were other gay people in my class, in classes before mine, after mine, and we all came out later, but never anyone in high school. And I think that that's where I note the generational change.
Are there aspects of this journey, the sort of rural and gay combo, that are different as you grow up and mature past adolescence and early adulthood? Things that maybe people don't think about as much as that young coming out kind of moment?
I think when I was younger, I thought every single thing was about me. And I thought if anyone was talking, they were talking about me. I just kind of took all of that on. And I think getting to the city, I just kind of realized that nobody really cared. And that was really refreshing and enabling to even be more myself.
Twig Deluge, on the line from New Mexico, I want to turn to you now. Tell us your story. Talk to me about coming out.
Coming out, I came out around 14. I originally came out as bi, and then at 15, I came out as a lesbian. And then I still kind of, things were still not fitting for me as far as identity, and eventually ended up transitioning back in 2008, and that felt a little more whole. So I think coming out, though, as a youth in Hayes, Kansas, was challenging. I mean, I had my mother, who was no longer with us, but she, her best friend was a trans lady who worked at the university in my hometown. My father was as supportive as he could be, but I think he still had his own internal dialogue that was going on with all of that. So,
What did your father do? You mentioned your mom's job. What did your dad do?
Sure. My father was, he's a dentist, actually, and he still does live in my hometown. And so I think that that was part of his struggle, was visibility, possibly. And I think he's grown, and we've talked, and everything's, you know, we've grown together and whatnot. But I think that in the original coming out stage, that was the difficult part for him, was the image, because he was a very visible individual in my hometown, and it was affecting possibly that image. So,
was coming out as transgender to this community of people, your family and others in Hayes, was that different from coming out as a lesbian, which you had done at a younger age?
Mm-hmm. I didn't actually need to come out as trans in my hometown, because I go back frequently, but it's
so that sort of,
because of
do you mean to say that spoke for itself?
Well, it's that it kind of, but it's that people know when I come back, those that I am still connected with. But because I still have to kind of keep a low profile when I do go back, because it still is an issue for my father with that visibility. So if I do go out in public, and it makes me quite sad quite frequently, but if I do go out in public, it's not like he's hiding, you know, necessarily who I am, but at the same time, he doesn't want to flag wave. So in order to preserve any kind of relationship that I do have with him, I don't end up doing that. So I think that, yeah, coming out as a lesbian, though, in the mid-late 90s was, I was the only person who was out in my high school. And it did create tension, absolutely. And there was, again, still tension between my father and I. My mother, not so much. You know, she was just didn't care, neither here nor there. But yeah.
What did that, do you mind telling us a little more about what that tension looked like, either with your family or with the larger community of Hayes, Kansas?
Sure. So with my father, it just kind of created a little bit of distance between us, as far as just communicating, as far as just connecting as human beings, created a little bit of an issue. As far as the community at large, there were moments definitely, and I hate to perpetuate the story of, you know, the difficult queer growing up experience, but this was my reality, was that, there were definitely violent moments, and there were fights, and there were letter threats and that kind of a thing. But I think based on my generation, I'm hoping anyway, and as I go back, things are slowly changing. But I think that, I did end up having a small group of friends that were very, very, very supportive. And, they knew. I think it's another one of those situations where everybody else knew before I did, before I came out. But it was again, I hate this stereotype, but I was a stereotypical, theater kid. I was into literature and goth and all that jazz. And, we stuck together quite tight-knit. And that just allowed me to, in my own head, stay safe, kind of have my own little safe bubble within a community that I didn't feel particularly safe in. So.
Tell me about where you live today. Do you live in Santa Fe proper?
I actually live out in Pecos, New Mexico proper, which is about 20 minutes from Santa Fe proper. But my existence is within Santa Fe, my job and all of that. But I still live very, Pecos is actually a very, very rural community. There's one gas station and a dollar store and ranches, and that's about it. So to be able to, still have access is quite nice to literature, and Santa Fe is very good for the arts and what have you. But to be able to have both worlds is super great for me.
Are you 100% out all the time in every situation? I mean, is it safe for you now in Pecos, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I'm out. Let's see. As you can hear, as I talk, if I don't speak, I appear to be a very bearish, so to speak, individual. I wear overalls at home. And that's not me trying to camouflage or anything to that effect. It's just how I dress, how I identify. So I'm out, but unless I speak, it's not something that, people are going to end up looking that direction. But yeah, if somebody asks, it's not, again, just bottom line, it's not something that people end up asking me about, but yes, I'm totally out in every aspect that I can be.
If there's one thing you wish your community in Hays, Kansas could have provided you growing up, to come to your own understandings of yourself and your own sense of safety, what would it have been? One thing that you didn't get that you think would be good for people to get?
Besides a sense of safety, literature, absolutely. The Hays Public Library is doing such an amazing job of really building that aspect of accessible queer literature and putting it out. They ended up doing that actually in June. I ended up having a complete table for Pride Month of specific queer literature. And I think they're doing such a fantastic job. But that would be one thing, just so that I could see, to be able to have access to see myself personified within things that I was reading, because literature is so important to me. But that would have been the big one, would be literature and accessibility to knowledge and information.
Thanks, Twig. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you.
We're now joined by a mother from Kearney, Mary Moeller. What are you hearing so far? Have you learned anything new?
Not really, but I can certainly relate to your guests so far. Yeah.
Tell me about how this issue of growing up gay or transgender in rural areas affects you.
Well, I'm a parent of a gay and a transgender child, gay and transgender children, I mean. And I was raised in northern Iowa in a town of 650 people. So I still have connections back there. I still have family back there. It's very obvious to me, though, that it would not probably have been too healthy for our family, my immediate family, to have remained in Iowa. So being closer to Kansas City is much better for our family than for us to have been up in Iowa. So, and Kearney was kind of small too. So it was, at the time that my children were growing up, it was kind of difficult at that time. But at that time when they were in school, we didn't really realize what exactly, why they were different.
Can you tell me the stories of kind of understanding what was going on with your children and what you felt you were able to do for them and what maybe you consider to be a struggle in the environment you live in or just personally.
Are you currently or at that time? When
at
we were
that
raising?
Time. Just okay. take us through that process.
Well, my son that is gay didn't fit in, and we just assumed that it was because he had other interests than other children. But as I look back, as a parent, at least my experience was that you don't typically think of your children as one or the other or anything like that. You just go along with society that boys play with boy toys and girls play with girl toys. For my kids, it didn't seem to be the case. So growing up in the 60s myself, I assumed that I was just being a pretty open mother, you know. The writing was on the wall with both children as I look back on it now, but not at the time. So,
did you let them talk to you about it? I mean, is that how you kind of came to understand what it was they were experiencing?
Well, actually, it wasn't until both of them were 25, and there's 5 years difference between the two of them, that they actually figured it out on their own. And my gay son met someone that he fell in love with, and he came home, and he never wanted to date someone of the opposite sex all going through high school. And I finally begged him to, in a senior year, to please ask one of his girlfriends to go with him to the prom because I wanted to be able to experience that. So at that time, he didn't really understand what was going on with him either. But when he came home at about 24, 25 years of age and said, I've met someone and I think I want to be with him the rest of my life, I was ecstatic because my husband and I met and got engaged within about 2 weeks.
You were just happy he'd found someone.
Oh, yeah. And he says, but I need to have you sit down because it's a guy. And that was the first we actually realized what was going on with him. And, yeah, it's been 10 years ago. And at that time, things have really progressed with society in my eyes since that time. But at that time, it was not a very acceptable thing in and amongst our friends.
What do you think that the setting of Kearney, Missouri in particular, how do you think that affected you as a parent?
It had a lot of effects because when my oldest son came out as gay, we lost a lot of our friends. Religious values, you know, it's for some reason other people assume that because they're in a church that they have the ability to judge unconditionally or conditionally rather than love unconditionally. And so growing up in a more rural area where there are specific churches right there, we had a lot of friends that said, if you're going to allow this to happen in your family and your child to be in your family, then we don't want anything to do with you.
We'll be getting right back into this discussion about rural life for the LGBTQ community after a short break. There's still just a minute to get your story in here. I'm Gina Kaufman. The number is 816-235-2888. Stay with us. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about country living for the LGBTQ community. This conversation is part of a station-wide exploration we're calling Beyond Same-Sex Marriage. Now that the Supreme Court has ruled on that legal issue, what are the next frontiers for people who identify as LGBT or Q? Our guests are Kansas City writer David Wayne Reed, Hiawatha resident Jake Wisdom, and Kearney mother Mary Moeller. And Mary, you were just telling us about what it was like for you as a parent in Kearney, Missouri, as your son was coming out as gay. You have another child who is transgender.
Yes, I do. That child didn't fit in at all. I should say he didn't fit in once he started developing. All of his friends were always male friends up to that point. And he played football, baseball, anything the boys would play, he would do. It didn't occur to me at that time that he was different in any way. I just thought maybe he was a good, you know, he was a tomgirl. And after the experience with my older son coming out as gay and the way I felt very disrespected for my children and as
like
parents.
Like on their behalf?
Yeah, on their behalf as well as on my own behalf because so many of our friends were so judgmental. That and so many of the people in the town were so judgmental. Now, I will say that has changed a lot. And I really think that in my impression is that gay and lesbian has been much more accepted than it was 10 years ago. And it's really moved a lot. I think we're maybe at the transgender at this point where gay and lesbian acceptance was 10 years ago. So when my transgender son came out, and this has just been within the last 3 years, I just decided that I was going to be public with it, you know, because this is not a choice, in my opinion. I watched my children grow up, and I know who my children are. And unless people have lived in the lives of parents with children who belong to the LGBTQ sector, they really don't understand what it's like raising kids like this, and that this is who these children are. This is who they are.
What do you wish you had as a parent that maybe you don't?
At this point, you mean?
Or at the time, in this journey, what would it have been great to have that was not available to you?
Well, something that I'm hoping to give to other parents at this point. I knew of no other parents that had both a transgender and a gay child. So the support that could have been there was not there. And even to this point, it's very rare for parents with transgender children that are in my generation to come out and talk about it.
Why do you think that is? I mean, there might seem to be an obviousness to that, but I am curious what you think about sort of really underlying that.
Well, you have, if a person says something, and your last guest spoke very well to it in going home to his hometown. My son doesn't care to go back to where my family was raised in small town Iowa. There's a lot of questions, and you never know what the response is going to be. And because of, and I really truly believe the religious movement has really done a number on these people, on people that are in this community, because the judgment that they can give is just as harsh as it can be. I mean, to a point where if I were a little younger, it would be very intimidating, but fortunately I'm not. And so it doesn't bother me to say, you know, my child is perfect as they were when they were born. It doesn't matter what your thoughts are. You know, I love unconditionally.
David Wayne Reed and Jake Wisdom, I want to get you guys in on this. David, what are you hearing from a parent that, I mean, is it interesting to you to hear how a parent experiences this journey?
It is, but it's really validating. I'm really pleased to hear it. And I think maybe that's perhaps a generational thing as well. I know that with my parents, they're significantly older than I am. And so we kind of almost skipped a generation. So it was a little bit of a crawl to get to the acceptance of the mother. But we finally arrived. And I think it's funny now that we have gay marriage, I'm feeling the pressure from my family to get married. And that's something that I didn't think I would I didn't think I would ever have that problem. And so now it's a new set of issues.
Well, speaking of same-sex marriage, in the news today, Dent County, Missouri has lowered its flag to half-mast in response to the Supreme Court's ruling. Does a gesture like that affect your feelings about rural places as homes and communities that can and do embrace gay people, David?
I think it's one county out of all of the counties in Missouri. And much like, you know, Fred Phelps in Kansas, I think that's just one unhinged, crazy person. And people see that, and that's just not the way mainstream's heading. That's just one instance, and I would rather them show themselves to be intolerant than hide it and try to be something that they're not.
Jake, what are you
hearing?
They'll
come around.
Jake, what are you hearing?
I agree with David regarding, I'm glad that they're at least exposing themselves, because it's nice to know who your allies are and who are not. I think it's totally isolated, and for a community like that, I think they haven't had any exposure to it. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking that those individuals that feel that way have never known a gay person. Okay, but regarding Mary, wow, you are such a wonderful mother. I don't even know you, but I feel very confident to say that. And I wish that there were so many parents like you in the world. So I just have to commend you on being so open and coming and speaking in an environment like this.
And I need to just jump in and say that the county of Dent County, Missouri, has actually reversed that decision, and the flag is back up. So
really,
yeah. So that was fast. Mary, talk to me quickly, very quickly, about the internet, because that changes the sense of how much our geography defines our experience.
I'm not sure what you're asking. I'm sorry. I know we're running out of time.
No, it's okay. David, would you say that the internet changes what it means to grow up gay in a rural area?
Yes, I think it puts everybody on a level playing field, and it provides isolation in a whole new way that we've never known before.
We've changed what it means to be isolated.
Right.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. This is just the beginning of KCUR's Beyond Same-Sex Marriage series, so it's not really over. David Wayne Reed, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Gina.
Jake Wisdom, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Gina.
And Mary Muller, good luck on your journey.
Thank you.
We spoke earlier with Twig Deluge, and thanks to StoryCorps and Suzanne Hogan for their contributions to today's show. It'll be archived later today at kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, the mayor of Clay Como, who also works at the Ford plant there, has a few things to say about his town. He thinks we missed just a thing or two in our last discussion. Let's hear what he has to say tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.